Good morning, and welcome to Experiencing God's Love, a ministry of St. Matthew's Baptist Church. This morning, Pastor Greg Barr's message is entitled, Making Love Last Forever, from 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 4 through 13. Now from St. Matthew's Baptist Church, here's the praise team and band with Chain Breaker.
If you've been walking the same old road for miles and miles, if you've been hearing the same old voice tell the same old lies, if you're trying to fill the same old holes inside, there's a better life, there's a better life. If you got pain, he's a pain. If you feel lost, he's a way maker. If you need freedom or saving, he's a prison shaking savior. If you got chains, he's a chain breaker.
Now we must search for the light of day in the dark of night. Found ourselves worn out from the same old fight. We've all run to things we know just ain't right. There's a better life. There's a better life.
Greg Barr, Senior Pastor of St. Matthew's Baptist Church. For nearly 7 years, I've looked forward to connecting with you by radio each Sunday morning. But I'm excited to tell you that there are even easier ways to worship with us. For example, you can join us on Facebook Live at 10:30 Sunday mornings and worship with us as we live stream the service. Or through Facebook, you can watch the service during the week whenever it's convenient for you. You'll find information on our website, www.smbclouisville.org. At the bottom of the page, you'll see an icon which links to Facebook. And we're working on some even easier ways to help you connect more in the weeks ahead. We'll be announcing these on Facebook and on Twitter, where I'm at Greg, SMBC. Thanks again for listening.
God, help us to learn to be still in your presence, to sense your peace, to gain a sense of your presence, to feel the empowering spirit of your love. As we open your word today, God, would you speak to us, challenge us, change us for our sake and yours. Through Christ we pray. Amen. Well, men and women look at life differently. Have you ever noticed this? If this is new information for you, I'm happy to provide it. The way we see things, interpret things, even remember things is much different. For example, let me share with you a couple of entries from journals of men and women. Husband and wife recording the events of the same day, the same circumstance. First, let me share with you what we find in the wife's journal.
Tonight, I thought Bill was acting a little weird. We made plans to meet at a nice restaurant for dinner. I was out running errands with friends all afternoon and thought he might be upset that I was a little late, but made no comment about it. We hardly talked at dinner, so I suggested we go somewhere quiet afterwards where we could talk more freely. He agreed, but didn't say much. I asked him what was wrong, and he said, nothing. I asked him if it was my fault he was upset. He said he wasn't upset, that it had nothing to do with me, and not to worry about it. On the way home, I told him I loved him. He smiled slightly and kept driving. I can't explain his behavior. I don't know why he didn't say he loved me too. He just kept on driving. When we got home, I felt like I lost him completely. It was as if he wanted to be nothing to do with me. He just sat there quietly watching TV. He seemed so distant and absent. Finally, with silence all around us, I decided to go to bed. About 15 minutes later, he came to bed. But I still felt he was distracted, and that his thoughts were somewhere else. He fell asleep. I silently cried. I don't know what to do. I'm almost sure his thoughts are with someone else.
So that's how the wife recorded the events of the day. But let's take a look at the husband's journal and see what he said about the same day.
A 2-foot putt to lose the match? Who the heck misses a 2-foot putt?
So we see things differently. We remember different things. Different things seem important to us at different points in life. Marriage is wonderful, but it's not always easy. You know, perhaps after some difficult, even unsatisfactory experiences with dating, you finally meet the person who's the one. Do you remember that? Meeting the one? Butterflies in your stomach, your hands were all sweaty, the colors were brighter when you were together, the music was sweeter. When you said goodnight at the end of the date, you counted down the hours until you were able to see each other again. It was just magical. But unfortunately, nobody ever told us that those starry-eyed days of romance would someday come to an end. And all those little idiosyncrasies that seemed so cute when we were dating, a few years later, grate on your nerves. And then the living together part, learning how to live together, can be quite a challenge. For example, I didn't know that it mattered how you put toilet paper on the holder until I got married. I lived in a dorm for 8 years. I'm just glad we had toilet paper. But there are all kinds of lessons that you learn when you get married. When I counsel a couple who's going to be married, usually one of the things I ask them is, tell me about your first argument. Because I want to see what their fighting style is, how we can help them improve the way that they argue. And I love it when they look at each other with these puzzled looks on their faces. Then they look back at me and they say, we never argue. And I try to smile and nod and look pastoral while knowing that that streak's about to come to an end. Because it's different when you get married, isn't it? No matter how long you dated, when you get married, there's still a steep learning curve as you know more about each other. In some ways, it's kind of like that television show on the Food Network called Chopped. Have you ever seen that one? The premise of the show is that you have these chefs, you have a group of chefs on there, and they have to cook an appetizer, an entree, and a dessert. And each round, somebody's going to get eliminated. But the fun part about it all is that at the beginning of each round, they open this mystery basket, and you've got to take whatever's in that basket and make something out of it. And so, for example, in one of the rounds, in one of the entree rounds, they had ground pork, sorghum molasses, cheese crackers, and mustard greens. And each of the chefs had to take those ingredients and make something out of them. Well, that's kind of the way the marriage is, isn't it? You get married and you open the basket. You never know what's going to be in there. How all of the past experiences of our life, the baggage that we carry, is going to be drug along with us. You don't know about the unexpected illnesses, about the financial crisis that looms over the horizon. We didn't know about any of that going in. But the challenge is to take all of those ingredients and with God's help to make something great of them. But to do that requires far more than romance. Because romance doesn't last. Romance is based on feelings, and our feelings change. Just like you won't feel angry for the rest of your life, or at least I hope you won't, you probably won't have those same romantic feelings that you had in the beginning either, because our feelings come and go. In fact, two sociologists, one W.F. Nemkoff, he had a good childhood, and Arthur L. Wood, tell us that romance diminishes about 80% in intensity in the first 2 years of marriages. In the first 2 years of marriage. And so romance won't see you through. But our problem is that in our culture, we seem to have confused love and romance. And so when those warm, fuzzy feelings begin to dissipate, couples begin to wonder, do we still love each other? Because that's what we thought love was. And perhaps that's one of the reasons why the divorce rate is so high in our country. If romance doesn't last, what does? Love. Love is what can see people through. I love to be with, I enjoy being around couples whose marriages have gone a long time. Just this week, for example, I was with a couple and they've been married more than 60 years. And just to be with them and watch them interact with one another. You know, their health isn't what it used to be. They have many more physical challenges than they did when they first got married. They don't remember the stuff they used to remember. Maybe that's why their marriage has lasted so long. I don't know. They can't do everything they used to be able to do, but the love between them has grown so strong. And you could just sense in the way they cared for each other, the depth of their love. Now that they didn't have to worry about jobs or all the other stuff that probably never was as important as they thought it was to begin with. Now they could just focus on caring for each other and loving one another. And we're blessed to have so many couples like that at St. Matthew's. And if you ask them, my guess is that they would say something to you like, you know, it was all so romantic in the beginning, but then it grew into something much deeper. How we thought we loved each other in the beginning was only a precursor. It was only the prologue of what would happen during the decades of our relationship as we really began to understand what love is and grow in love for one another. So what is love? If love is what will last, what is love? Well, the Apostle Paul fortunately wrote that letter to the church at Corinth that you hear read at so many weddings that helps us understand a bit more about what love is. Listen to what Paul said. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It's not rude. It is not self-seeking and is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not rejoice or delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. Just think about how practical Paul's words are. As he talks about love, love is patient. I don't know about you, but I'm not a very patient person. Anybody else not a very patient person? I hate to wait on stuff. I hate to wait in line at the grocery store. I do not like to wait at the DMV. I don't like waiting in traffic. Why is it, by the way, that when I'm on the Waterson Expressway during rush hour, that the lane I'm in always is the one that stopped, while you people are flying by me in the other three lanes? And so, having noticed this, I want to improve my position. And so I get over, and finally, I work my way over three lanes of traffic to the lane that was moving most quickly. And you know what happens as soon as I get there? It stops. And all you people in the other three lanes start moving now. Love is patient, Paul says, and I've got a long way to go. Love is kind. Love is kind. John Gottman, a retired professor at the University of Washington and a noted researcher in the area of marital relationships, says that contempt for one another is, in his mind, the leading cause of marital breakdown. He says that spouses who tend to be overly critical of their spouse miss 50% of the good things that their spouse does, because all they're paying attention to are the wrong things that they can correct, and it builds contempt. When people give their spouse the cold shoulder, it makes their partner feel invisible, undervalued, and it undermines the relationship, eating away its core. He goes on to say, though, that kindness, in his opinion, kindness is the glue that holds relationships together. His research shows that kindness in a relationship is one of the most important predictors of satisfaction and stability in marriages. It makes the other person feel cared for, valued, and understood. And so Gottman's research demonstrates what Paul knew 2,000 years ago, that love is kind. One more, love keeps no record of wrongs. How hard is that to do once you've been married for a while? That love keeps no record of wrongs. You've heard the story, I'm guessing, about the couple who went to the marriage therapist, and they're talking about their issues, and the husband says to the therapist, "Every time we argue, she gets hysterical." And the therapist stops him and corrects him, and he says, No, I think what you meant to say is that she gets hysterical. He said, "No, I said what I meant. Every time we argue, she tells me everything I've ever done wrong in our relationship." Well, some of us tend to be a little too historical. We bring up and remember all of the bad stuff. But when we do that, when you can't let go of past offenses, then all of those mistakes become a weight that gets held over the head of your partner. And really, a weight that gets held over the relationship itself. And when we hold weight like that up for long enough, eventually it drops and has the potential to crush everything in its path, including the relationship. Forgiving is hard. Letting go of past hurts can be even harder. But unless we can do that, unless we can take Paul's advice and keep no record of wrongs, to keep short accounts with one another, then our marriage is going to be difficult and we're going to struggle. Paul says so many practical things. Love is patient. Love is kind. It's not boastful or arrogant or proud. But notice what Paul does not say. Paul doesn't say anywhere that love is a mushy feeling inside you, that love is butterflies in the stomach and clammy hands. That's because love isn't an emotion. Love's not a feeling. Love's a decision. Love's a decision of the mind, a decision of the will, a decision that I'm going to put someone else's needs above my own, that I'm going to sacrifice, if necessary, what's good for me for the good of our relationship. And that's not easy, because I think inherently we all want to look out for what's best for us. But love causes us to elevate someone else's concerns even above our own. Love. Love's a word that we throw around so freely, no wonder it confuses us. We talk about we love pizza and we love to go to the beach. We love the cards, we love the cats. And then we also love people. No wonder it's a bit confusing for us to figure out what love is. The Greeks maybe had it right. They had several words that describe love, and I'm sure that many of you have heard these before. There are at least four words in the Greek language to talk about love. The first is eros, from which we get our word erotic. Eros is a son of Aphrodite, the Greek god of love. People thought of eros the way that we think of Cupid, you know, shooting arrows through the hearts of young lovers. And eros is the closest thing we have to describing what romance is. The second word for love is the word storge. It's instinctual. It's a familial love. It's an instinctual love, perhaps, but a love that develops between parents and their children. A love even that can take place between a pet owner, for example, and a beloved animal. This familial sort of love. The third word for love is philos. It's the bond between beloved friends. The love that develops between people who are bound together by a common direction, by common goals or common ideals. And this kind of love, by the way, is critical in marriage. This kind of love that is described as being bound together by the same ideals, by the same goals, pushing together in the same direction. This is critical for us. That we share the same basic outlook on life. And I think that perhaps is part of what Paul's talking about in 2 Corinthians chapter 6. He says, "You're not the same as those who do not believe, so do not join yourselves to them. Good and bad do not belong together. Light and darkness cannot share together. How can Christ and Belial, the devil, have any agreement? What can a believer have in common with a non-believer?" Now, Paul's not trying to be narrow-minded. Paul's not trying to be unreasonable. In fact, he doesn't even say that followers of Jesus shouldn't be friends with those who are outside the faith. But I think what Paul is saying is that when it comes to the deepest relationships of life, it's difficult to have a very deep relationship with someone who ultimately does not share the same core values that we share. Marriage is hard enough when both partners are pulling in the same direction. But when he's pulling in this direction and she's pulling in that direction, our relationship is that much more complicated. And so there needs to be in this type of love, this bond between friends, some agreement at the core of what our basic values are. What are we at the core of this family? What is it that we ultimately believe? And then the fourth word for love in the Greek language is agape. This is the highest form of love, the deepest kind. This is the kind of love that God has for us. Agape is a kind of love that creates value in another person. You know, if you think about it, romance is kind of selfish. Romance says, "I love you because of how you make me feel." But agape is different than that. Love is different than that. As one writer says, agape love does not consider whether or not the person being loved is attractive or worthy of love. Instead, the person becomes attractive and worthy as a result of being loved. Agape love is not based on feelings or performance. It doesn't rise or fall depending on the response of the one being loved. Agape love is based on a decision like the one that God made. That God was going to make us the object of his love, to become whole and holy by his love, regardless of our response. Regardless of our actions, God had determined in advance that God was going to love us. As we think back to 1 Corinthians 13, Paul talked about several characteristics of love. Love is patient, love is kind. But then, as he continues through that, as he comes to the end of that section of 1 Corinthians, he talks about things that will not last, things that will come to an end. He said, "But where there are prophecies, they shall cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there's knowledge, it'll pass away. So all of that's going to be gone. Someday all of that stuff that we feel like so important, all of that will pass away. It'll be done. So what will last? What ultimately lasts? Well, Paul answers that. Now these three remain. Faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. When everything else is gone, there's faith, hope, and love. And as important as faith and hope are, the greatest of these, Paul says, is love. Love outshines them all. Love never fails. Where there are romantic feelings, they'll pass. Our emotions will rise and fall. Our feelings will ebb and flow. But love remains. Love is what will last, even when the romantic feelings have diminished. Love never fails, and love beats romance any day of the week.
I've been listening to Experiencing God's Love, a ministry of St. Matthew's Baptist Church. This morning, you may have reached a decision concerning your relationship with God, or you may want to find spiritual guidance for your life. Contact us this week at 502-896-8882 or online at smbclouisville.org. St. Matthew's Baptist Church is conveniently located at 3515 Grandview Avenue between Breckenridge and Cannons Lanes. Join us for worship in person this morning. Bible study for all ages at 9:15, followed by worship at 10:30. If that's not possible, then join us here next week at 7 for Experiencing God's Love. From St. Matthew's Baptist Church, where we're loving and leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus.